Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in this Tuesday night to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour. This is a show for folks who are interested in topics having to do with your intuition, connecting with your intention setting, manifesting, focusing on your imagination to bring your reality into closer proximity and into bringing that into your dreams and into your awareness. If those topics are of interest to you, you're definitely in the right place. We have a great show for you tonight. I do encourage you to share your pretty shiny picture with Inner Voice so we know that you're listening to the show and we can send you updates on what's coming up in future shows. This is with Insights Radio. We also have some other wonderful hosts on the radio station. Check out Iggy and Rosa Garcia's With Insights Radio program on Monday night and Mud Toe Sasquatch's program on Saturday night. I also want to share with you our newest venture, the Intuitive Light Community Radio Show. I and three other hosts host a show that is all about helping you connect with your unique intuition building process. That show is on Sundays, and periodically we have a group show, and then we break down and work with a theme and have a show once a week where one of us hosts that show. So that's a great, great way to connect, to focus on your growing intuitive process. And also, I encourage you to check out the Facebook page, the Intuitive Light Community, and you can also check out my page, Inner Voice Intuitive Tarot Guidance. So that is all the spiel. Oh, well, and next week I'll be doing an in-house show, and I'll be talking about the idea of having a backup plan and how sometimes having a backup plan can keep us from manifesting our biggest dreams because we don't focus on, with our full intuition, our full imagination, on what it is we want to bring into being. So I've had some really interesting stories around that that I'll share, and then I'll take calls on the topic next week. So that's what will be on Inner Voice Intuitive Hour next week. And now, with no further ado, I want to introduce Brad Tesh. Brad Tesh is an intuitive practitioner, an intuitive tarot card reader. He does channeling work, and he has just written a book called Brad, why don't you just say it? You're there. I won't try to remember.
Oh, okay. It's called Seek Joy, Toss Confetti with Bonnie Shve and me.
That's
right.
That's
right. You had it very close.
good. Cool beans. So he just wrote that with Bonnie Shve. That's a wonderful, wonderful book that talks about the concept of happiness, real joy, present-centeredness. I was lucky enough to have Bonnie Shve on the program with Brad a couple weeks ago. And then Brad is doing a wonderful program with Bonnie Shve and Mary Nail called Attune, the Sessions program. And that is on Tuesday night from 7 to 8. Actually, I'm shifting this program, Inner Voice Intuitive Hour, to Wednesday night because I want to start taking a yoga class that only meets on Tuesday night. So you can catch the Sessions and you can catch Inner Voice Intuitive Hour. They're both great programs. Anyway, I'm going to be quiet now. And I want to ask you, Brad, when I think about this concept of intuition, following your inner voice, sometimes this pops up for people and they follow it and they get really, really excited about it. And sometimes it just kind of, comes back to them. And they finally feel like they have to listen and they have to break through to listening to it.
Uh-huh.
What was your journey like in terms of following your own intuition? What path did you follow?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. Well, I think I just kind of developed it as I went along. I think one thing kind of leads to another when you're working with intuition or you're working with anything like that, I think one thing just sort of progresses into another, and you start learning about your natural instincts, learning about your intuition and what it can do to help you and what it is. And so I started reading books, first of all, and then I kind of moved into doing yoga classes, and then I kind of moved into reflexology and massage work and working with practitioners of that nature, and then I started opening more and more. So I think it's kind of like a stepladder or something like that. Like you climb from one step to another, and then another one leads to another, if that makes any sense.
Oh, no, that absolutely makes sense.
So I think it's like a progression. You start out, I think a lot of people have some fears when it comes to maybe opening for the first time to intuition or opening to the spirit world, because maybe they have, you know, different beliefs that were taught to them or different ideals that were presented as they grew up. So sometimes they have a little bit of that fear going on. But as you read and as you come to an understanding of what resonates with you, I think some of that fear dissipates. So it's not as, you know, cognitive in your energy or in your thoughts. So you allow kind of more your natural flow to be present.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a great way to put it. I think that's true. It's just like meeting a new person, you know, you're anxious in the beginning and then your defenses kind of go down as you engage the person more and more and figure out who they are. It's the same way with your own internal abilities, you know. You go, oh, well, maybe this isn't so scary. Maybe it's helpful. Maybe it's cool. You know, like, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think intuition is something that is really, and spirituality is something so natural when a person is born. And as you, you know, get older and as you grow up, you know, I think some of that becomes sort of, it can in a way be lost because you're being taught from different angles, different things, and sometimes you have to weigh that. But when you're real young, if you're taught it's okay to be open and explore, then you don't have as much of that fear.
Absolutely. I think that's true. I think we do learn what we're taught, and then, you know, that helps kind of shape our framework, and then we have to kind of move through it. And so I think some people, I'm always amazed with guests who say, oh, yeah, my parents were really, really into this. My mom read cards. They really supported me on this journey from the time I was tiny because my experience was so different than that. Like, I was just kind of really treated like, well, that's not real, you know, you're just nuts and things like that. And I think sometimes it's harder to develop and, you know, to believe in your own intuition when you grow up in an environment where it isn't supported. What did it look like for you in your home environment, Brad?
Well, I was lucky. Most of mine was fairly open to, I mean, there was, of course, you know, there was church things, and that was presented, you know, and I heard about that. I went to church, which was fine because a lot of it in the Christian religion actually does dovetail into all forms of spirituality. So it wasn't such a bad thing. But it wasn't so indoctrinated to the point that it almost suffocated. It was there, you know, it was presented, but I didn't have to conform to it exactly. I was allowed to play, which was good in that way.
Awesome.
So it kept me a little more open. You know, it kept me a little more open to the other things, the possibility of other things, rather than it being, you know, so structured.
Very cool. Well, I know that one of the things that you particularly excel at and really, really enjoy is tarot card reading. And I know that you do it from an intuitive perspective. And I think about tarot card readers and how it can be used to divine or tell what's coming up and how it can be used more as a tool to just kind of check in with someone's energy. And I know some people read the cards real straight, so they don't connect with their intuition. They learn the meanings of each card. And I wonder how did when you started reading tarot cards, Brad, did you do it in a more traditional way and then just come up with your own style over time, or how did that come to be for you?
It kind of came in after I had already opened to working with my intuition and spirit guides and the angels. So it was actually probably a second step on that ladder for me rather than a first, because I had already began working with the spirit realm and my own intuition and doing some reading for people. And then that came in through a friend of mine who told me about the tarot school, and I started taking classes with them, and that's really how I got into it. So it was like a second growth spurt in my spirituality, because with the tarot, you uncover so much in just a single card.
Yeah.
And I think people can read it any way they really want to. You can read it traditionally and be effective, or you can read it intuitively and be effective, or you can combine the two and be effective. So
I
don't think there's a predetermined way a person has to read their cards. I think it's just a normal instinct for how they read them.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think is so amazing about tarot. I teach some classes myself, and it's so incredible because people will open up the tarot and lay out a spread and get something totally different out of it. I've had people totally look at the images and pay attention to all the images, details, little details in the images. And I'm not as visual a person as I am auditory or conceptual. So for me, I don't usually notice the little details. And my clients would be like, oh my gosh, do you think that's a, oh, what is that? Oh, what is that symbol? And I would be amazed because I'd be like, I never even saw that at all, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's so fun like that. It is.
I know, it's amazing. And then some people would be really into the numbers and calculating the numbers and noticing repeating numbers. It's just amazing when people get these cards in their hands, they can do so many different things with them. And it's just so cool to see all the different things that they do that would never occur to me or wouldn't be my first way of reading at all.
No, and I think a lot of what was previous to maybe the last 10 years or so was maybe more taught more traditionally in some senses. And I mean, I'm sure there was other places where it wasn't taught as traditionally. But I think in the last 10 or 15 years, a lot of teachers are taking the tarot a different way and using more symbology mixed with intuition rather than just the symbol.
I think you're right. I've seen that a lot in terms of blog talk shows and then just on Facebook. And I've seen a lot of, you know, people turning in and using it as a tool to connect with their intuition on a lot deeper level. So I think you're right, for sure.
And you can, when you do that, when you do that with a person and allow a client, and I know you know this really well, to see into the card more than what maybe you're seeing, you open another level to the reading. It's not as standardized, or it doesn't just come from what you're saying and spirit, it comes from what they're seeing and saying and from spirit as well. So it adds, I think, a whole new level to the discovery of tarot.
I totally agree with you. I think that really starts to change the client because it's coming from them, you know. It's like they get so excited and they feel connected to it instead of someone telling them this means this. You know, it's that whole adage or idea of, you know, show, don't tell. You know, it's that same concept.
Right.
It's like so powerful for them.
Yeah, I see a lot of people really take it and run with it, and it opens them up to a whole new set of insights. And I really love doing that because it's not just what I'm seeing, is what they're seeing too. So we've got a whole different level of communication and intuition going on than if I just pulled a card for them, laid it out on the table, and said, this is what I see or feel.
Exactly. That's too, I know you're probably familiar with this, but that I think is what's fun about, you know, being in a class or teaching a class, facilitating a class, because it isn't just what the card means to one person, it's what the card means to the whole group, which is so cool.
Exactly, yeah, and in a group atmosphere, and it's not so much individual reading, it can go even deeper. Because you're going to have so many varied perspectives of that card that maybe you didn't think about and maybe your client didn't think about. You know, in a group setting, the whole group gets to converge intuitively and read and
absolutely.
Learn. So group settings are really interesting in that way.
So tell me about this tarot school that you went to. How did that come to be, and what did you study, and just what is that?
Okay, so Tarot School is run by Ruth Ann and Wald Amberstone, and they have been doing this for many, many, many years, and they founded a school for the tarot. They teach in-person classes, they teach phone classes, or they call them teleclasses. They teach correspondence courses you can get in the mail. They teach Reader Studio in New York City once a year, where all kinds of tarot authors and readers and artists gather for a weekend or a 3 or 4 day. And so I've taken a lot of their phone classes through the years, and their teleclasses you can take from a phone in your own home, and then you get to participate live in the class, and Walt teaches them and Ruth Ann teaches them from time to time as well. And as you participate, you learn, and you get to ask questions, and you get to hear other participants who are on the line and their insight as well. So it's not just, you're not just learning from one angle. You're learning from many angles. You're learning about meanings of the card that are very in-depth, very intuitive, and very intrinsic. So he presents them in a way that the combination of both standardized intuition and old kinds of new insights maybe you've never even heard. So they're really enjoyable for me, and they're really lively, and I always learn so much doing them.
Very cool. And I know that, you know, a lot of people really deal more with the major arcana. Do they work mm-hmm. with the minor arcana too, or how do
oh,
they
yeah.
do that? Mm-hmm.
They work with every card in the deck. They teach suits sometimes, and sometimes they teach them in segmented order, and sometimes they teach major arcana. But they work with mm-hmm. every card in that deck and teach it in one way or another at some point in time.
Very cool. Very cool.
So that's where I really learned how to read the tarot intuitively, because
uh-huh.
they present you with so many different ideas. So many different ways to look at a card. It's not just the normal kind of way that you lay down a card. Well, you know, that's the, you know, Four of Cups and everything. This goes more in depth. This is what kind of secret the card has, or what kind of background. Where does it come from? What kind of energy is with it? What objects pop out to you? Why do they pop out to you? It just
very
delves
cool.
into so much, the Tree of Life and all kinds of numerology. There's just so much that they teach. So I really take notes, and then I go back and reread from time to time. Really helps me with my reading.
I think what you're talking about, kind of hitting on, is this idea that Jung talks about the personal unconscious, you know. I mean, there's the collective unconscious where we all say, oh, well, this means this, and this is the symbology for this. But the personal unconscious is where we go, oh, you know, this card feels like this to me, and this really
mm-hmm.
pops out, and it draws
exactly.
from our own experiences and story.
Exactly. And those classes are full of experiences and full of wonderful stories that help you connect with the card. And meditation They teach meditation with the card. So you learn on so many different levels. I couldn't possibly say they just teach it this way or that way because there's so many different ways they teach it.
So cool. I think it's awesome, too, like within my own tarot card reading, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, as I change, the way I read the cards changes, you know, or what deck I choose to read with changes. And that's such a very cool experience.
Yeah, isn't it fun? Yeah, sometimes you're drawn to a particular deck because of the energy. That's fine.
Absolutely. Or I remember for a while I was really, really into reading with the four sacred elements, and then I noticed, you know, that I could read in terms of numerology and the beginning and middle and end of a story. And then I'll just notice, like, that really draws me because something else is happening in my personal life that evokes that. And so it's so multidimensional. It's based on where you're at in your own life, you know, what pops out for you, what's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes the cards, they come out as they repeat in your life, you know, when you have a certain theme or a certain message spirit wants to give you, they'll repeat. So you sit down to work with the tarot for yourself 1 week and you get, let's say, the star card. And then like 2 or 3 weeks later, you sit down again and the star card you get. So you start noticing patterns with what spirit or what your energy pulls from that deck because if there's a message in it. There's a reason why it keeps repeating.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that is so powerful. I mean, I always think there's 78 cards in the deck. So what is the chance that you're going to pull the same card again and again and again?
Uh-huh.
Or the same suit again and again and again? You know, I mean, just by statistical probability, it's unlikely. And yet, I remember years ago, I used to always pull the Nine of Wands over and over, and I'd shuffle a whole card deck, and Nine of Wands, there it was. That can't be a coincidence.
Right. It is, isn't it? Yeah, and I know. And so when I start getting more than one, like if I see a pattern that repeats more than once, so say I get, you know, the star, and then I get the star, and I think, okay, coincidence, maybe. But if I pull the star a third time, there's no way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, absolutely no way. There's a message there.
Absolutely. So we talked just briefly about pulling some of the cards and just kind of interpreting them and talking about what the cards mean to us and how we would read it and that sort of thing. So I'm excited to do that with you.
Yeah, we can definitely do some of that and see. I think it's fun because each person sees different things and each person will feel different things.
Absolutely.
I really do. So
very
when you look,
cool.
You want to just start? Do you want to work with the star card since I brought it in?
Sure, absolutely.
Then we can move on to a different card.
Perfect.
So with the star card, what you really see there in the card is, you see this woman? She's sort of leaning or standing over what would be called a lake or a pool of water or something. And you see her pouring water into the pool of water, the lake, or whatever you want to call it. All these beautiful, different colored stars behind her. There's a bird in a tree. She doesn't have anything on, so she's fully exposed. But nudity in the tarot technically means a lot of different things on an intuitive level. So when you look at this card, you've got the name to consider, the star. What is a star to you? That would be the first intuition you could start with if you were just looking at the card. What does a star mean to me? When I think of a star, what does that facilitate in my mind? Does that bring me a thought of a star in the heavens? Does it bring me a thought of a star like a movie star? What does that do for my mind? The first thing you can start with when you look at a card in tarot is the name.
Absolutely.
And then you can start looking at the imagery. So if you look at that card, you can see that water, and water typically in tarot means emotion. Water's very connected to the emotions. It's connected to intuition, the psychic senses. So she's pouring water, and she's got one foot on earth and one foot in the water. So it's almost like she's a duality between heaven and earth. She's earthed, but she's also got the spiritual side and the emotions of water. So you start pulling in symbology like that. Like you start learning what water means in tarot. What do pathways mean in tarot? What do columns mean in tarot? What does earth mean? And you start using that into your reading of the card, and you can start pulling those things out. So the reason I knew, you know, that water's emotions and can be spirit and can be all these different things is because that's what I've learned about water in the tarot. And you can also just go at it from a different way. Even if you didn't know that, could you look at the picture and think, well, why does she have one foot on the water and one foot on earth? Let's say you didn't know much about the tarot. You could just look at the imagery and use your intuition. Why is part of her on earth and part of her in the water?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I was learning about tarot in the very beginning and learning about the elements, I just went out into nature and I just sat in nature in around water and around earth. And I just thought about the qualities, you know. Water is fluid, it's receptive, it is very, very powerful and very, very shaping, yet it wears something down over time. It's not like a boulder. It doesn't come in and smash into something. You know, so then you can think about that in terms of the personality of the person that you're reading and just kind of pick up energetically on whether or not they have watery energy or do they need more of a water way of approaching a situation.
That's great, too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that reading that way by going out into nature is such a, because we're so disconnected, but it's such a powerful meditation, you know. So I think that's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And just going on a little bit more here with it, you could come and ask yourself, well, why is there no clothes? What does that symbolize, the nudity, the being open? Is it openness to me? Is it fear to me? Is it vulnerability? Is it expressing yourself? Is it opening to your psyche and your intuition and your whole self and not just one part of yourself? What does that symbol, you know, in me, what does that invoke symbology within my psyche?
Is it opening to a part of yourself, the sacred, because the moonlight is shining down on her. So she's cast in the moonlight, you know, which is about, that's a sacred experience of being out in nature and being vulnerable in nature. So absolutely.
Yeah, and why, you can look at it and say, well, why is there ripples in the water that she's pouring the jug of water into the pond there? Why are there ripples? What do ripples mean in this reading? Or what could they symbolize to me intuitively? So when you're working with doing a reading, you're not doing it solo, and you're posed with a question, could you read the ripples into it? Why are there ripples? And do they represent time, or do they represent movement, or do they represent change? All kinds of things you can do solo or doing a reading for someone else.
And why is she pouring the vessel from an enclosed vessel into a huge body of water? Like, what is that?
Oh, yeah,
that
that's a good
thing?
One. Right.
Go on and on and on.
And why does the water in one jug form ripples that she's pouring out, but in the other jug, it goes out into different kinds of, like, reservoirs or different kinds of, you know, pathways from the other jug?
Absolutely. And how is that experience of the water different than the experience of the water that forms into the tributaries, you know? Absolutely. And I think that's such a very empowering way to teach tarot to people, because it makes it about their journey is smack dab in front of them, as opposed to going and reading the book and reading the PAT definition, which may not fit for someone at the time.
Yeah,
or
and
may
it
not evoke.
It may not fit, and you may look at that definition and then look at the card and feel in your intuition and your energy, wait, that's not the meaning or the intuition or what was coming to me, so am I wrong? And then you start questioning your intuition.
Exactly. Oh, that's beautiful. Absolutely, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I had to learn, because I've done some speaking engagements at this one bookstore called Phoenix Books, which is a wonderful bookstore. It's books that are out of print and things like that. And I would get up and the first thing I would say is, don't open a book. Which I then had to learn, like, oh, I shouldn't say that because these people are sponsoring me and da-da-da-da-da. But that is my initial inclination, is that sometimes books can overwhelm people with information that it's extraneous and isn't really connected to them, and it can make people less inclined to follow their own unique intuition, just like you're saying. I mean, I really think that's a good point.
Yeah. And I just, you can draw on all those elements, you know, there with the stars in the heaven above. Do they represent being connected to the ethereal, to the spirit world,
or
shine like you're, you know, the star that you are? Do you use your God-given talent to shine, or do you conceal? So there's so much you can put into one card. And I mean, I know that is a major arcana there, but there's even that much into a minor arcana.
Oh, there absolutely is. And that's not even getting to the spread. You know, that's not even getting to the patterns and the stories that are created from the beginning to the end of the reading. That's just one card in isolation. And I think it's so cool, too, when you turn over the card and then you'll see a repeated pattern in another card. I mean, you can pull out another card that has similar kinds of iconography and positioning as the star. I think that the Temperance card does, has very similar, but different. And so then you're telling this very nuanced story that repeats itself or doesn't, which is just as important, you know?
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, let's look at the Temperance card here with the star.
Okay,
now, with Temperance,
okay,
you have a very similar scenario going on. You've got one foot on earth, one foot in water, like you were pulling out and saying so well. You've got a balance of earth and emotions, or an earth and spirit again. You've got water being poured again. But look at the difference.
Yeah.
Instead of pouring into a pond or into the earth, the water is being poured between the two cups.
Yes, exactly.
Almost like in that one, it's more symbolic of balance and patience rather than it is emotion.
I think of, when I read the Temperance card, I often think of the idea of the cups representing the energy in the past and the future. And our tendency is to lose our own stability or our own presence because we're worried about how much water is going to spill between the past and the future. But she's like the goddess figure. I mean, she's really empowered. So she's not worried about whether or not she's going to drop a bit of water, you know, outside of the cup. She's about the process and the engagement of the act of moving the water and balancing the energies.
Yeah, just like with the feet there, between the balance of water and of earth, we've got balance going on. And then we've got, in that card, we have a fully dressed figure. We don't have any kind of non-clothedness, and we've also got a path running behind the figure into what looks like a mountain with the sun over it.
So you've
got a lot of different choices there, a lot of different choices. You've got a pathway, you've got what pathways may symbolize to the person you're reading for or to you. Are they an opening? Are they an opening in your current path? Are you choosing a different path? What path are you going to follow? Is it going to be a straight path, or is it more going to be a winding road?
Yes. Do they represent too much structure, like someone chose your path, or do they feel like you get to define what your path is? Absolutely.
Right. Yes.
Very cool. Very cool.
He's got a list of different... you've got a lot of dichotomy you can read into the Temperance card there. And you could even read the figures. Each figure in tarot could be, even though it's depicted as male energy or female energy, it could be a male or a female interchanged in the card. So a lot of people associate temperance with the Archangel Michael, but a lot of people associate temperance with a woman, with a goddess-like figure. So it can go either way, depending on your own perspective.
Well, and then it's cool, too, because, you know, each deck depicts the picture itself differently. I've got the Gilded deck here. And in the Gilded deck, the Temperance card has one of the cups full of water and the other one full of fire, which totally changes it, you know?
It does, because the decks are different. They depict the imagery different. Artwork is different. The ideas are different, but it sort of stays to the tarot general theme of the Rider-Waite deck, but it changes.
Yeah. I always tell people when they're first learning, and some people are kind of resistant about this, but I say if you really want to learn tarot, you need to choose a deck that's Rider-Waite-based first. Just so you can make sure that all of the depictions of the cards are going to be kind of the baseline of what the cards are going to be. It's kind of like that whole idea of, you know, when you learn art first, you learn how to understand figure ground and how to do foreshadowing before you do abstract art. You know what I mean? So
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You always work, I think, with what you can first take in and be settled with the energy of. So you
Absolutely.
Don't want to overwhelm yourself when you first start working with tarot.
Absolutely. And then you can veer off and go in all different directions. You can create your own decks. You can, you know, I mean, it's endless what you can do then once you just kind of
have
a framework.
People have all kinds of decks out there. They have all kinds. They have, decks that are just very easy, that don't even have a lot of the same symbology as Rider-Waite. They made up their own decks, and they bring different kinds of energy into those decks, and a lot of people resonate with it.
Absolutely. I have a friend, a really dear friend, who has a deck that is clear, and all of the images, like you can put one image over the other and create entirely different pictures. So it's a clear background, and then it's got lined drawings on it. And you can build up the story through laying one card over the other. It's a really interesting deck.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that fun there to build a story and build a reading?
Absolutely. and
I think another... Go ahead.
Go on. No, go on.
I was going to say one quick thing here that what I think is important sometimes when you do a reading, and I think sometimes readers may not think it's of as much importance, but a lot of them do think it's very, very important. If you're shuffling and you're picking like a 3-card reading or a 4-card or however many cards, and a card happens to fall out or pop out, you need to pay attention to that particular card in that reading.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
That has a strong message, and it could be that it's just an overview of the question. But if one happens to, like, jump out or make his appearance known, big time pay attention to it. I mean, I always do. You don't have to. I know some readers do it differently, and they just go ahead and one falls out, and they put it right back in and keep on shuffling. When I see that happen, I almost squirm inside. I'm like, no, keep it out.
Well, it's almost like that card has a message before the reading even comes to fruition. It's so excited. It's like, I gotta show you what I know. I gotta pop out right now. So yeah.
Right. And I mean, that's just me personally. I know everybody has their own style, and there's nothing wrong with everybody's style. But just for me, I have to keep the card out. It's just something I have to do.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I do the exact same thing, for sure. So should we pull another card?
Sure.
Okay. Let's see here. I'm pulling the 7 of Swords.
The 7 of Swords. Wow, that's an interesting one. So, when I look at the 7, I get very, like, so many different impressions in the Seven of Swords. It could be, people read it differently, but it could be like looking over your shoulder at the past, observing mm-hmm. something that's going on. It could be almost like somebody's trying to deceive, or it could be a deception mm-hmm. thing. But what is so funny is if you look at the feet, one is going forward and one's almost kind of like just got the toes on the ground. So the feet are doing two mm-hmm. different things. The legs are doing two different things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I often think of the Seven of Swords as someone who's taking on too much thinking, because the swords are about thinking. And so in a lot of the cards, it shows someone who's carrying all these swords, all these different thoughts, all these different ideas, and a lot of times they're weighted down by them. So, I mean,
that's
seven,
true.
Traditionally in numerology, is about spiritual, connecting with the spirit, and yet this person is trying to carry all these swords and is trying to keep everything, you know, in his grasp. And so sometimes I always think about someone letting some of that go, or changing some of the energy from thinking to feeling or doing, as opposed to...
Oh, that's good.
You know,
yeah, that's a good way to look at it, too. And to look at it, you know, in the other way, with swords being pictures of the mind or the thought,
mm-hmm.
the sword energy
mm-hmm.
is, you know, what you're thinking. It's energy of what's going on in the mind. A lot of people teach it that way. And so is this person... do they have too much in their hands? Are they thinking about having too much responsibility? Or are they not paying attention to where they're going? I mean, he's obviously not
exactly.
looking at where he's going. He's looking
yep.
back behind him. Or he's looking
yep.
at something else. He should be paying attention to what's in front of him.
Yes, absolutely. But I will say, and I'm wondering about you with this, if I have a client who's really, really excited about thinking, you know what I mean? Then I'll look to the cards around it, and I'll think,
uh-huh.
oh, you know, how do these cards reflect this energy differently? Because if my client comes in
uh-huh.
and I get an intuitive impression that's different than what I'm getting from the cards, like I'll weigh that, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, and that's wonderful when we do that, too, because it goes ahead and opens up even more depth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
And it
cool.
brings
Anything
also
else?
A connection. It brings a connection to the other cards around it. It helps that
mm-hmm.
card. It's, in other words, they're supporting, which is so great
absolutely.
That you, know, you see it that way, because they support each other and they inform each other. It's almost like the tarot talks, and they talk to each other
it's
while you're...
absolutely like that, yeah. Yeah, I always think of it as like, almost like moving stories, you know, like there's a potential story here, and it's about working with the intuition to figure out which potential story is true.
Right, and so when we are putting the cards together in a spread, and you're looking at it side by side, you can also group them. I mean, I know you
mm-hmm.
know this, but for people who might not be as well-versed or just learning or starting their adventure, you can group them. If you have more than two or three cards, you can see what suits go together. You can see what information is
mm-hmm.
presented to the question, and actually put two or three cards on one side of the table and two or three cards on the other side of the table together, because they're each telling a story on that particular part of the question.
Absolutely, absolutely. I also like this idea that the card wears more than one hat, you know, because the card, like any kind of minor arcana card, is going to wear the hat of earth, air, fire, or water, and also wear the hat of the number that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's so cool to see that you can lay the cards out in different patterns based on which theme you're focused on. So if you're focused on numbers, you can lay earth, air, fire, water out, ace of cups, ace of swords, ace of... But if you're focused on the element, you can lay the cards out and look at the relationship of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of fire. You know, so you can see that they wear more than one hat. And I always think that's a really cool thing to see.
Absolutely. I think that is very cool to see. And the way you said it was really good. because you can delve into the card even deeper that way and into your own intuition, because you're it's like putting puzzle pieces together that sometimes they're fitting absolutely perfect, and then other times you might want to adjust.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very cool. So do you want to pick another card, Brad?
Yeah, we'll pick another one. Let's see here. I'm going to pick one and just see where we go here with this.
Cool beans.
So, see what wants to come out. The Hanged Man.
Oh, I love the Hanged Man. This is one of my favorite cards in the deck. Let me find him.
Oh, that one's fine.
Awesome. So what? How do you usually read the Hanged Man? What shows up for you there?
Well, with the Hanged Man, you've got a person attached. You've got them upside down, and you've got one leg crossed over the other. So they are in one heck of a stuck position.
Yeah.
Or there is one heck of some stuck energy going on somewhere. I mean, the thing is, there's a way for him to become unhanged. There's a way for him to move his hands about to get out of that, uncross his leg, and untie himself. There's a way for that energy to be untangled. But it's at the time when that card comes up, it usually automatically, in my mind, goes ahead and says, that is one stuck energy.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. I always think of the Hangman in terms of the idea that a lot of times suspension is necessary. You know, I think of it in terms of like a cocoon, like, you know, before it becomes a butterfly. So it's hanging upside down and it's transmuting its energy. And if it if it stays there and it is hard on itself about the fact that it's suspended, then it can't focus on the energy of transmutation, the magical part of being suspended. But that if it just allows itself to go with the process and say, oh, a lot is unconscious right now, a lot seems like it's not moving, but I'm just going to allow for it to be this way, then we can really do the inner work.
I think that's a good explanation of that card. Yeah. And you've also got here around the man or woman's head, you've got like an aura, like almost an angel halo. But you've got the tree. It looks like a tree with vines growing out of it, at least it does in the right of way, that this person is attached to. So again, you've got the depiction of all the psychic, spiritual, you know, manifestation energy of the psyche. And then you've got the earth. So it's again, you've got the two depicted here. And I think that kind of duality is almost depicted in every single card of the tarot somehow or another.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that the tarot is, you know, people have a tendency, I think in the 1970s, a lot of the books were very black and white. They were very, this means fire and damnation, and this is wondrous and marvelous. But I really think what the tarot does is it helps people be a lot of times in more in-between spaces, because it shows images of duality. It shows images of having to be in between and look at more than one thing at a time.
Yeah, and I think so. I think so. And I think you could even read to the colors. We hadn't talked about colors much yet.
Oh, yeah.
With the shirt that the Hanged Man's wearing, the blue, the spirituality, or the effervescentness of the color blue versus the color of the pants, which is red, which is power, which is passion, which is strong energy. So why do we have all this contained strong energy with the red that's stuck to the tree and all this blue energy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely. I always think, too, when this card comes up, that once the person allows themselves to be suspended and accepts it and kind of lets go, that then they can put the energy into turning themselves right side up. And when they do that, they can share their gifts and value their uniqueness. But if they're judging themselves, they stay in this place of suspension. They won't focus as much on what they need to do.
Absolutely. And if you did flip the card upside down, it almost gives a whole new take on the card itself. You can see the hair going up on end versus when it was upside down. It's, the hair is standing up straight now.
Oh, you're right.
The leg looks like it's more being like a ballerina or being balanced that way on purpose versus stuck down. And it
almost looks
like maybe they don't even have their hands tied behind their back. Maybe they just have them back there because that's how they want to appear.
You're right. Well, and that's true. I mean, I think that there's a lot of cards in the tarot that are kind of about the difference between appearance and essence. You know, I think the Fool is a lot about that. Like, is the Fool appearing this way, or is the Fool really in this space? You know, and I think that you really bring that up in a nice way, you know. Or even the Seven of Swords.
Yeah.
Is it the Two of Swords where the woman has the blindfold, or is it the Seven of Swords? I can't remember. But she has the blindfold, and she has her hands blocked. And she has this look on her face like she can't move forward. But in reality, the binding that she has on her wrists is really, really loose. So it's that whole idea of, is it really this way? Is this an opportunity? Is this, you know, something that needs to be this way?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it require a shift in perspective?
Mm-hmm. It is the two where the hands are, the blindfold is on. She's sitting on a bench made of stone and there's water behind her. That's the two. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool.
And there's a lot that can be read there, too. It's about choices. It's about, do you want to keep the blindfold off and not see your emotions and behind you? Do you not want to look at your emotions? Do you not want to look at your psyche or your intuition? Do you want to be cold as the stone you sit on?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
Or
absolutely.
Do you want to make a choice to put the swords down, go one way or the other, and maybe remove the blindfold so you can actually see the beautiful water behind you.
Wow. We have time for maybe one more card before I want to make sure that people know where to get you, get in touch with you for all of your wonderful work and your books and all of that. So why don't you want to pull another one? Or?
Yeah, I'll let you pull it.
Okay, cool.
I'll let you pull our last one.
All right. I am pulling the Tower.
Oh, my. What an interesting one to end on, isn't it?
Why not?
Oh, my. The Tower, wow. Okay, so that does have, now, Tower energy has a good side, too. It's not all bad.
Yes.
There's a duality in the Tower that I think the imagery of the card can almost override when you first look at it, because what you're essentially looking at is two people falling out of a tower and lightning striking it.
Mm-hmm.
But is Tower energy, is that kind of shock to the system, that kind of disaster or that kind of, you know, quarrel or argument or whatever is going on that kind of tower energy represents, is yet springboarding a person to desired outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's very
hectic
at the time. Maybe it's very, very traumatic because you see fire in the tower and you see lightning and you see these people. It looks like they're in horror falling down. But is it a rebuilding of sorts? Is it a push in the right direction to where that kind of energy had to exist in order to propel you to a more comfortable place?
Mm-hmm. That's a great, great way to read the Tower. I love that. I always think,
a
too,
lot
of
times that,
Go on.
A lot of times when I see Tower energy in a reading, and I like to call it Tower energy, it tells me that there is some sort of quorum or some sort of hostility going on within that question that we need to look at in a deeper way so we can figure out how to get beyond that shock and get beyond that so-called negative energy.
Absolutely, absolutely. I always think of the Tower too as letting go, because if this person holds their body stiff when they fall out of the tower and they land, they're going to be really hurt. But if they let go, i.e., their defenses, they just kind of let things go and not focus on their defenses and hold on so tight, then they can fall more easily. And they're going to fall anyway. You know, I mean, they're already in midair. So it's,
oh, they're
it's
already, they're already,
it.
It's already struck. The lightning's already
exactly.
hit the tower. It's
exactly.
whatever, when that cart comes up, whatever's going on has already went off or is about to
so
go
it's
on.
It's about relinquishing
it's...
control in the moment, you know,
mm-hmm.
saying, okay, there's nothing I can do here. I'm just going to let this happen. I'm going to fall and then
yep.
pick myself up. So.
Mm-hmm. And it, again, if you flip that card, you could have a whole other take on it. It's almost like the seekers are... The seekers are reaching for something, not that they're falling. Maybe they're
That's
reaching
lovely.
For their spirituality, or maybe they're reaching almost like reaching, you know, up toward what they're trying to obtain, that they're not being dominated so much by tower energy.
I really like that idea of flipping the card. I've never even thought of that, and that's a really interesting way to see the card differently and to see the...
Mm-hmm.
the experience that the quarant is having differently from a different angle,
mm-hmm.
you know?
It is. The tarot school really taught me about flipping cards and looking at it from different perspectives, because sometimes I would read reversals in a reading and sometimes I wouldn't. So
mm-hmm.
I learned how to, when you flip it, what you can do with it versus write that up.
Mm-hmm. That's really, really great. I really like that. Well, we don't have very much longer. We just have a very few minutes, but I want you to be able to tell people where to get your wonderful book and where to go for your readings and the work that you do.
Okay, awesome. You can go to my website for readings. I do intuitive tarot. I do channeling. I do work. I do all kinds of intuitive coaching, and that web address is www.awakeninglight.com. And that's spelled awakeninglite.com. Or you can go to my blog, which is innerlight.wordpress.com. And you can find my readings and my writings there. And you can find the book that I co-authored with Bonnie Chavez called Seek Joy, Toss Confetti. And it's on Amazon.com. You can get a paperback or you can get an ebook.
And just a real quick shout out for your new book that's coming up, which we don't know
yeah.
the name of yet, which you're
right.
co-authoring. Well, you're not co-authoring it. You're writing it and having
mm-hmm.
different intuitive friends, of which I'm one of them. So I feel really, really
mm-hmm.
excited about that. And you're answering their questions channeled through spirit. So that's just so
I am. It's gonna be a fully channeled spiritual book. I sat down with my spirit guides and my angels and my God source, and just as much as I could moved ego out of it and just allowed them to write it. The book is written and it contains questions from all kinds of wonderful participants. About different aspects of their experience, about spirituality, about human nature, about magic, and it should be available within the year. And I'm really excited to have had
so
everybody
cool.
participate in it and submit such wonderful questions for me to work with. And it's really built, I think, a very solid book. So
very
it's been
cool.
just a joy to have all these people in the book.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing the hour with me, Brad, and thank you for your wonderful
thank
work.
Thank you. It was
You're
fun.
You're welcome.
Have a good
okay,
one.
Okay, it was. You too.
Things were like poets that we never find time to know, but when
whatever you do between now and next week, go and make magic, feeling magic, inspire magic, create magic, connect with magic, because that's what we're here for. Have a great evening, everybody. Bye now.